We were noticing how the honeybee was losing itself in the flower, attracted to the flower due to its fragrance and the pollen there. And for that reason, because it is the pollen and the fragrance is so sweet, there were bees always following Krishna, because Krishna is sweet in every way. Today, Krishna willing, and by the mercy of Giriraj, Govardhan, and Srila Prabhupada, and so many nice devotees, we will hear something about the form of Krishna. Yesterday, we spoke about Krishna's holy name. And does anyone remember where we heard that if you want something beautiful, do you remember that? Was it Prabhupada who said that? If you want something beautiful, then take the lotus feet of Krishna. Does anyone remember where that was from? Because I couldn't exactly remember. But if you want something beautiful, if you're attracted to the beauty, to beauty, accept the lotus feet of Krishna, because there is nothing more beautiful than the lotus feet of Krishna. Ali Prabhu, could you hand out that July 4th lecture? Today we'll do something that we haven't done before. This is a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's that was given on July 4th in 1968 in Montreal, in Canada. Prabhupada had visited there. And unfortunately, the lecture itself, Prabhupada's speaking, the sound isn't there. So I'll read it in a slow way. Of course, I can't read it like Prabhupada spoke it. Raise your hand if you don't have one yet. Does anyone remember what we heard Jiva Goswami saying? I had mentioned that Prabhupada said the same thing, and we heard Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying it, and we heard Bhakti Vinod Thakur saying it. That the form of Krishna will manifest in the heart by the mercy of the holy name. But yet, even though that is such a pure and exalted stage, yet, by hearing about the glories of the holy name, we become attracted. And by hearing about the form of Krishna, we become attracted. And then material desires will go far away. So let us hear Prabhupada's words. This is in 1968. In Montreal. This is probably a month or two, perhaps even, after I took initiation. Probably one. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Krishna consciousness is eternally existing in every human being. That's vibrating, Pooh. Not all, in every living entity. What verse is that? Chaitanya Charitamrita? Nitya Siddha Krishna Preme Sadhya Kabonai Shravanadi Sudar Chitte Koribe Udai. Udai means arising. It will arise if we chant and hear Shravan Adi, hearing and the other processes of devotional service. Love for Krishna, which is in everyone's heart, will come out. Not only human being. You have seen the one picture, that of a calf, how he is loving Krishna by licking his body. You have seen it? Oh. I get it right. This was one of the first pictures that was available of Krishna in the Krishna consciousness movement. Very, very, very attractive. Very wonderful. And just to see the simple love, simple and pure love of the calf and Krishna. Very, very touching. You have seen it. The calf, how he is loving Krishna by licking his body, you have seen it. So even in the calf, even in the animal, even in the bird, even in the beast, we have described all these things in our teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The Krishna book had not yet been published, but Prabhupada had just published the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That when Krishna was present in Vrindavan, how the cranes, how the cuckoos, how the peacocks, how the hawks, how the flowers, how the creepers were loving him. Krishna is all attractive, and this is Vrindavan. How every living entity is simply desiring to please Krishna. No false ego. This is the real ego. Sudha chitte. The heart is purified. Kodibe udoy. And this is what rises. So it is not a thing that we have to teach. Simply by good association, by reference, it comes out. It is called sutotita nyaya. Just like a man sleeping at night, he forgets everything. Where he is lying on and what he is doing and which family does he belong to, which country does he belong to, what is his occupation. Everything he forgets. Sleeping means forgetfulness. But as soon as he is awakened, he remembers everything. Everything. Oh, I have to go to the office. I have to do this thing. I have to meet such and such person. Everything. Similarly, Krishna consciousness is sleeping in everyone's heart. He is hankering. He's hankering after how to love Krishna. But he is being checked up. He is hankering. That Maya is checking him. Don't try to love Krishna. If you love Krishna, then you will forget all these material activities. Maya is speaking. Smeram bangitraya parachitam sachi vishtirna dristam vamsi nyasta dara kishalayam ujjalam chandrakena. Govindakyam hari tanumita keshitato pakyante mapreksistas tavayadi sake bandusange astiranga. This is a very nice verse composed by Rupa Goswami. That one friend of one gopi, she is warning, my dear friend, please do not go that side. Where? In the Keshi Tirtopakante, on the bank of Keshi Ghat, Yamuna. Why are you warning me? Why are you telling me not to go to that place? Because there is that boy whose name is Govinda. Don't go there. What is he doing? He is simply smiling. And with his flute, and he is so bright by the rays of the moon that he looks very beautiful. Then what happens? No, I want to do it myself. I want to enjoy. One time, when Prabhupada was in San Francisco in 1967, he saw this picture and recited this verse. And he asked the devotees to write this verse underneath this picture. He's very attractive, isn't he? Don't look at him. Don't look at him. You'll be finished because he's standing there with his flute. He is so bright by the rays of the moon and he looks very beautiful. Now if you go see him, then you will forget your engagement with family and friendship and love and everything. Oh, he will absorb everything. So don't go there. She is warning, don't go. In other words, Krishna is so attractive by his activities, transcendental activities, by his beauty, by his opulence, by his strength, everything. He is so attractive, he is all attractive. So please, none of you should look at that picture. but I think you've all looked, and now your material lives are finished. But your material lives were finished long ago. It is just a matter of time. In this place, right here where we are sitting, right where we are looking, this all-attractive person, Krishna, so beautiful, was walking. Right here. With his garment, his dhoti, that was yellow, bright yellow, like lightning, like gold. And his soft and sweet smile. Maybe we can bring that one over a little closer so we can't look at him more easily. So we won't be able to see him at all. Maybe. In other words, Krishna is so attractive by his activities, transcendental activities, by his beauty, by his opulence, by his strength, everything. If you read the history of Krishna's activities in the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, they are so attractive. This is why we are asked to read the Srimad Bhagavatam and read the Bhagavad Gita, so we become attracted by Krishna. But what did we hear yesterday? We heard that if we have material contamination in the heart, we will find these things which are ultimately all attractive, we will find them not at all attractive, like a person who has jaundice. He does not find things that are sweet intrinsically. He does not find them. They taste sweet to his tongue, but it is because of his jaundice. But the cure... the chair idea didn't work. No.
Put it on the flip chart?
No, but someone else is there.
What if you turn the chair upside down? We can put it on.
No. No, it can't be below Prabhupada there. Yeah. Okay. See if he can... Yeah, that's a perfect place for him, as long as he doesn't fall. Just right on top of Govardhan Hill. Attracting all living entities. So this is why we're supposed to read, hearing about Krishna, so we become attracted to him, more and more attracted. This is natural. This is not artificial. Krishna consciousness is so nice that once situated in Krishna consciousness, you will forget all nonsense of this material life. So this movement is simply to revive that dormant consciousness. Nothing artificial. And by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, it has been made very simple. Simply chant Hare Krishna and dance. That's all. You haven't got to be very highly educated in the university. You haven't got to exercise in so many yogic processes, sitting postures, or hard press your nose, or you keep your head down. Nothing, no labor. Simply come here, chant Hare Krishna, and take Krishna prasadam. This very simple method, you will revive your Krishna consciousness. You know all that 2 years ago, in 1966, I started this class alone. I was chanting only. That's all. And these boys and girls, gradually they came, and they became attracted. I did not teach them any artificial method of yoga practice, but simply I requested them, you chant and hear. So very easy process. You can revive your dormant Krishna consciousness simply, Shravanadi Sudha Chitte Korea Udai. The process is that as you go on chanting, then all the dirty things within your heart will be cleansed. Simply, we want to cleanse. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended this chanting, and he has said that the results of chanting will be, the first installment of your gain will be that your heart will be cleansed. This we heard yesterday as Chaito Darpanam Arjanam. The first thing which is being tried by the so many mental speculators, how to cleanse the heart. That will be achieved in the first installment by simply chanting Hare Krishna. Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Navapanam. So Krishna is very beautiful. Now, so these are the pastime areas of Krishna. Krishna and all his associates. The grass, the trees, the cows, the cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, the gopis. Every day Krishna would wander here and have his pastimes. And always, we won't speak about the pastimes today, that it, Krishna willing will be for another day. Always he was showing this exquisite form. Now, Adi, could you hand out the three verses? We're going to discuss three very famous and important verses that describe the form of Krishna. They are from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first one is spoken by Lord Brahma. And this one, Brahma speaks as the first of his prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. And the background of this verse, or the prayers of Lord Brahma, is that, and we know the pastime, how Krishna had been herding the cows and playing with his friends, the calves. And as we were hearing in the 12th chapter, Krishna, which we didn't hear yet, he killed Agasura. And Brahma heard the demigods, their praise of Krishna. And he descended from the higher planets to see what was going on. And he saw this little beautiful boy being praised. And he saw that this little beautiful boy had killed this great demon. So Brahma wished to see further pastimes of this boy and see if he was actually his master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what did he do? We know what he did. He stole away the calves and the boys. And then he returned in just a moment of his calculation, which was a year. And amazingly enough, although he knew he had taken away the cows and the calves and the boys, the calves and the boys, each and every one of them were right there, exactly as if he hadn't taken them away. He went and checked to see if the boys and calves that he had taken were where he had placed them, and they were indeed there, but yet those calves and boys were playing with Krishna as if nothing had happened. So Brahma became bewildered. How is it possible they are there and they are there simultaneously? And then Krishna, to take away the bewilderment of Brahma, but actually to increase the bewilderment of Brahma, and to show Brahma or give Brahma a glimpse of who he was, he showed how those calves and boys were actually all Vishnu forms. They were none different from him. And these forms, thousands, unlimited of them, numbers of them, were covered from toe to the top of their heads, these Vishnu forms, with tulsi leaves. And every living entity in the universe was worshipping them. And they were entering in and out of Krishna's body. This body, the body that looked like this, but younger. The body that looked like this, the body that looked like this. Unlimited potency in and out. Worshipped by every living entity. All attractive, all powerful. Unlimitedly powerful, but yet unlimitedly beautiful. No huge bulging forearms and this and that with veins sticking out and oiled slick body going like this, but unlimitedly powerful. Inconceivably unlimited powerful. Sometimes the devotees tended to draw Krishna in that way with muscles. And Prabhupada said, no. He doesn't need muscles to lift anything. He's unlimitedly powerful, but yet unlimitedly beautiful and all attractive. So Brahma saw this little boy standing there, and he was completely astounded, and he fell to the ground with his helmets. And he saw that he too was worshipping Krishna. And unlimited Brahmas were worshipping Lord Vishnu. He fell to the ground in complete astonishment. And he began to offer prayers. And this, the first prayer that he offered is the first verse in the 14th chapter describes what he was looking at. The beauty of what he was looking at. Krishna. And we can see, so it's, Namo vidyate brahmavapusheta didambaraya. Everyone. Namo tadidambaraya. Namidyate brahmavapusheta didambaraya. Tadidambaraya. So Lord Brahma said, know me, I offer my prayers. My praise. Idya means O most worshipable one. So he recognizes that Krishna, although standing there like an uncultured fellow with a lump of foodstuff in his left hand, he doesn't even know enough to keep his food in his right hand. He's wearing no shoes and wandering around, but yet for the most intelligent and powerful person within the universe, he recognizes, Nomi Idya, O most worshipable one. Te, unto you. Abra, who is like, Vapushe, whose body is like a dark cloud. Tadit, with lightning. Ambaraya, and whose garment is like lightning. So Krishna's body is a beautiful bluish, blackish hue that is completely effulgent at the same time. One time during the rainy season, it was last year, not this year, one morning, fairly early in the morning, I saw a monsoon cloud with the sun newly rising. Being covered by this monsoon cloud. And it was so incredible because that was the closest thing that I had seen to resembling the color of Krishna, because Krishna is, he's megasham, he's darkish like a cloud, but this type of a cloud, a monsoon cloud filled with rain, it was simultaneously darkish and completely effulgent. And it was shockingly beautiful. Shockingly beautiful. So Lord Brahma was looking at this little boy, 4 or 5 years old, who was darkish in complexion, effulgent, and his garment was like lightning. Sometimes Krishna's garment, and also Srimati Radharani's complexion, tapta kanchana gaurangi, compared to molten gold. And one time, with the desire to see molten gold, I went to the Perth Mint, where they had a display every day. They had some gold and they melted it. And they were showing how gold was refined. So I went there and I saw what molten gold looks like. And it is also incredible. It's really unique because we know what gold is, but it has an effulgence when it's molten. Has anyone ever seen molten gold? Yes, It's incredible, yes? Yes? It's like from a different dimension, practically speaking. It's a beautiful yellowish golden color. Golden color, of course, it's gold. But it's really effulgent. You can practically see the rays coming from it. This is Krishna's transcendental body. Not it is, but this is the closest we can describe it. When in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's Madhurya Kadambini, when he actually sees Krishna's form, he falls down to the ground and says, "Previously, I have compared your transcendental body to a darkish rain cloud or to things like gold of this world, but it actually has nothing to do with these things. This is the material world. But how can we in the material world understand the glorious effulgence and beauty of Krishna, who is fully transcendental? We can point at it and say it is something like that." Just like in 1966, close to the time when that lecture we read was given, one hippie who had taken drugs, obviously, said, asked Prabhupada if Krishna consciousness, if the result of Krishna consciousness was like LSD. LSD? Krishna consciousness? A drug? But Prabhupada, being very kind and trying to give this person some glimpse of an understanding of what Krishna consciousness was, said, "It is like an ocean of LSD." If you think that there is some pleasure in this, of course it's not pleasurable, and Prabhupada was always critical of it. But if you think there is some pleasure in that, just imagine an ocean of that substance that you are glorifying a drop of. That's Krishna consciousness. So we say that Krishna's dhoti, or the complexion of the skin of Srimati Radharani, tapta kanchana gorangi radhe brindavani shri brishabanu sute devi pranamami hari priye. We can compare it to molten gold or lightning, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "Now that I have seen you, I understand that my comparisons were terrible, impossible, having nothing to do with what I am now seeing." So Brahma is seeing this. The most powerful person in the universe is seeing this little boy who is all powerful and all effulgent and all beautiful. And he's wandering around Vrindavan. Tadid ambaraya gunjavatam sa. And he has, his garment is like lightning. And gunja avatamsa, he has ornaments. he has an ornaments. The earrings will come. It could be that his ornaments for the ear. He's wearing gunja berry earrings. How, as they would say in contemporary youth society, how cool. How amazing that he's wearing these beautiful little black and reddish berries as earrings. And paripicha, peacock feather, lasat, resplendently with a peacock feather upon his head. How wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful, how beautiful. So this is what Brahma is seeing. Vanya Srije, he's wearing a garland of vanamala, of forest flowers, and Kavala, he has a morsel of food in his hand. Vashana, buffalo horn bugle, we heard about that when he was herding the cows. Vetra, or Kavala, morsel of food, Vetra, stick, a buffalo horn bugle, Venu, a flute, Lakshma, Sriye. His beauty was characterized by his soft pade, his soft lotus feet. So he was offering his obeisances, nomidya, unto you, the son of Nanda Maharaj, who is so beautifully standing before me now. So here is the translation. Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. Why should Brahma or any living entity offer prayers to please Krishna? Why should we praise Krishna? Because this is natural. It is natural, and it removes the envy within the heart. And we should all know that our turning our back on beautiful Krishna means false ego. It means that there is actual enmity with Krishna within the heart. This is what it means to be a conditioned soul. There is envy or enmity with Krishna. And praising him. And this is for every conditioned soul. This is the essence of false ego. There is anger, there is enmity, there is envy of Krishna. No matter how good someone in the material world appears, it is only an appearance. Because their consciousness is based on false ego. So praising Krishna, glorifying him and his qualities and his form and his name and his activities, it purifies the heart. Because the envious person, he wants to be praised himself. And this is, of course, one of the dangers of taking to Krishna consciousness and progressing a while, and everyone will say, oh, you're giving a nice class, you've given a nice class, you've done this nicely, you've done this, you've done this, how nicely you sing, how nicely you do that. And there's such a tendency of the conditioned soul to think, yes, how nicely I have done. This is false ego. And this tendency itself will block us from Krishna. To think, I am anything. To think of ourselves as anything but Krishna's eternal servant, the eternal servant of Krishna's devotees. The eternal servant of Guru, Vaishnavas, Mahaprabhu, C.C. Radha and Krishna. Servant, servant, servant. To step outside of that identity for half a moment means Maya. So how advanced does a person like Srila Prabhupada have to be that Mahaprabhu trusts him enough that his container, the container of his love and devotion for Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga and C.C. Radha and Krishna is so complete that he can take that praise and the adulation and the money and the garlands and everyone saying Jai Prabhupada. And you saw, when, raise your hand if you noticed this point when you saw the pictures of Prabhupada yesterday evening. Raise your hand if you were here yesterday evening and saw the pictures of Prabhupada. It was so obvious that he was from a different dimension. What could you say? You know, all the youthful, exuberant Hare Krishna chanting around, and Prabhupada was always deep and grave. So deep. No false ego, so he could be in the midst of that and not become proud. No false ego. No enmity with Krishna. No other identity other than I'm serving my Guru Maharaj. My worshipable deity is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. My eternal home is in the service of Radha and Krishna. No movement from that shelter. My dear devotees, I would like to say that we try to avoid the difficulties of life. It's natural. But as we all know by now, if anyone over 12 years old or 16 should have realized that it is impossible to avoid the difficulties of life. They come, they go. Sitosna sukha dukha daha. Happiness comes, misery comes. Happiness, misery, 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 happiness, happiness. According to our karma, we get different proportions. But we try naturally to avoid the miseries and have the happiness that comes. But dvandva mohena bharata, this tendency of a conditioned soul is the illusion that binds him to this material world. And instead of making that our attempt, we should watch our consciousness and see where our shelter is. In misery, in happiness, do we take it upon ourselves? If we take the praise, we have to take the criticism. But instead of taking any of it, we have to fix our consciousness as when someone praises, maybe sometimes it is your duty to say yes or not say anything or not say every time, oh no, no, I am a fallen soul. But inside, we have to be thinking like this. Not have to in the sense that we don't have a choice or an alternative, but have to in the sense that if we wish to be with Krishna, we have to not think of ourselves in any other way other than servant. Servant of the servant of the servant. A very, very humble position. That is the price for being with Krishna. Seeing this beautiful, 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 unlimitedly beautiful. Remember again that we heard the first day that Krishna is Sadashwaryapurna. What does that mean? Yes, and he is full. That's what he's composed of. But also that each of those opulences, the fame, the beauty, the strength, the knowledge, the wealth, the renunciation, one more? Wisdom. No, I said that. He possesses each of those to an unlimited degree. My dear devotees, what does unlimitedly beautiful mean? Does that mean that he's five times more beautiful than the most beautiful person of this world? 10 times as beautiful? 15, 20, 100 times more beautiful? 1,000 times more beautiful than the most beautiful? We can't even imagine what 1,000 times more beautiful means. What to speak of unlimitedly beautiful? So therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when he is actually confronted with the unlimited beauty of Krishna, he falls to the ground, unconscious. It's incomprehensible. To us, to me. But we can get a glimpse. So Krishna would stand upon Govardhan Hill. He would play his flute. And Govardhan Hill rock would melt. Everyone would become mad and attracted. Madly attracted upon seeing Krishna. the way he dressed, everything. And yet, he was standing there with a morsel of food in his left hand. And Brahma, we can understand easily why Brahma became bewildered and stole away the boys and the calves, because how could this boy, yes, he's beautiful, yes, he's intelligent, but how can this boy be the God? How could he be the controller of the universe? How could he be the cause of destruction, the creator? This beautiful little boy, how is it possible? And therefore he performed his pastime of taking the boys and the cows to see, to find out how powerful. And he is the greatest of jnanis, the greatest of the intelligentsia of the universe. And his conclusion, after seeing beautiful Krishna standing there with his peacock feather, with his effulgence, and yellow dhoti, with a morsel of food, with the gunja earrings, with a peacock feather, his conclusion was that there is so much difference between my body and his body that I cannot even calculate the difference. That gives us a glimpse of what unlimited power and potency is. Incalculable. Brahma was saying this. And there he was, standing, herding the cows, acting as if he's a coward boy, with a stick. All coward boys have their sticks, with a flute, a buffalo horn, and yet all attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's Brahma's prayer. Now, at this point, I would like to mention that a very important point in Krishna consciousness. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, I believe. Maybe Adi Purusha, you'll remember where this is. We studied it this year. Where someone says to Krishna, or possibly Lord Narayan, that if you are angry, you see God is angry. Do you remember that one? Fifth or sixth canto. If you are angry, you'll see Krishna as angry, an angry God, an unforgiving God. Because we're not actually seeing Krishna. We're seeing only our own mind. Or to put it another way, what we are seeing is what Krishna allows us to see according to our mentality. And this is why Brahma saw such a beautiful Krishna. Because his mentality, the devotion that he had, the purity that he had, caused Krishna to allow him to manifest that much beauty in his mind, that much of his beauty. Because remember, Krishna's beauty is unlimited. But the receptacle of our consciousness is as limited or unlimited as our consciousness is. So what causes Krishna to manifest the most beauty? So if you're angry, Krishna manifests aspects of his angriest nature. And if anyone can get angry, it's Krishna who can get angry. He's unlimitedly angry. And when he became angry at Hiranyakashipu for tormenting Prahlad, he became the personification of God's anger, and he was Nrisimhadeva, and he ripped him apart. He ripped him apart upon his lap, and then he took his intestines in his anger to show everyone that this demon was indeed dead. He took those intestines and wore them around his neck like a flower garland. How angry do you have to be to do something like that? And when the all-powerful becomes all angry, where are you going to hide? Because Hiranyakashipu had the mentality that caused Krishna to manifest that, and that's what Hiranyakashipu saw. And Brahma, on the other hand, saw beautiful Krishna. But his mood, Nomi Idya, I offer praise. Idya means, O worshipable one. So there was so much reverence, awe, and respect for Krishna's power, because he had just witnessed Krishna's power manifesting Vishnu's in and out, and therefore he had bowed down on the ground. Practically he didn't get up. He had bowed down on the ground, his heads, and this is Brahma, who everyone in the universe is subordinate to. So there was so much reverence in his consciousness that Krishna manifested this wonderful, beautiful form. But it is not the complete form of Krishna's beauty. Brahma's consciousness could not contain that because he was not a resident of Brajabhumi, who have such an intimate relationship with Krishna. Krishna completely manifested his whole personality, his whole everything before them, because they don't care. They're not interested in how powerful he is, and they're not afraid of him. They just simply love Krishna. They just simply love him. When he holds Govardhan Hill, they don't think, oh my God. They don't think, oh. Like Arjuna, when Krishna manifested the universal form before Arjuna, Arjuna became so apologetic. Previously, I didn't realize who you are. I used to sit with you. I used to eat with you, O Lord. I lied on the same bed with you. Please forgive me. But when Krishna manifested the universal form within his own mouth that Mother Yasoda saw, she said basically, please, Krishna, never mind this. Just don't eat dirt anymore, because it will be bad for you. She's thinking only of Krishna with the fullest love. This is Vrindavan. This is Vrindavan. You want to be in Vrindavan? This is the price. It's everything. Pashupa of the cowherd, Nanda Maharaj, Jaya, Anga, the son, you, the son of the cowherd boy, Nanda Kumar. So there's only one thing stopping us from seeing Krishna standing on Giriraj Govardhan, playing his flute, herding the cows, playing with the cowherd damsels, running to Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. And that is that that we have material consciousness and we don't have the kind of love that's complete and makes us fully trustworthy. Because I know if I had a great vision of Krishna, I'd suddenly let it out. Did you hear that Burijan had a vision of Krishna last night? And I'd be walking around. Yes, I have seen. I have seen. Yes, but no, I'm so fallen. But I want to take something from me. But the residents of Vrindavan don't even want ecstasy. Not that they have an aversion to ecstatic bliss, but if there's a choice between serving Krishna and being ecstatic, They'll curse the ecstatic symptom. They'll stop it. So many examples I've given of this. Dharuka, when he pushed away the ecstasy because it was getting in the way of his service. Their desire, we can't comprehend what love actually is. Not even this kind of love, what love actually is. Because now we're in Atma Endriya Priti, come, instead of Krishna Endriya Priti. We want to please, I want to please my senses. This is the ultimate issue for me. Yes, I like Krishna consciousness. But if I'm going to be made miserable in Krishna consciousness, I get my actual aversion to Krishna, my actual anger at Krishna, my actual envy of Krishna, it comes right to the surface, in fact. This is false ego. This is conditioned soul. But the residents of Vrindavan, pure devotees, no tendency like that. Real ego. And therefore, their consciousness, Krishna reveals in their consciousness, because their consciousness is suitable to hold this revelation of Krishna's form. Second verse. This verse is a description of Krishna, not by either Lord Brahma or the people who were seeing Krishna. Probably it is Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Prickett. This is from the 22nd chapter of the 10th canto, where the cowherd boys were cowherding with Krishna. And suddenly, the cowherd boys became very hungry. And they said, "Oh, Krishna, we've been herding our cows all morning, and our stomach is rumbling. Oh, where can we get something to eat?" Now, here's a question. We're just saying, we're speaking about the selflessness of the love of the Brijabasis, and the cowherd boys are complaining that they're hungry? Actually, this is the indirect way of speaking. This is the cultured way of speaking. And this is the way of love. That actually they were fearing that Krishna was hungry. And therefore, not because if you're with someone and you think it's going to be inconvenient and you're feeling some hunger and they say, "Are you hungry?" and you think it'll be inconvenient, then you say, no, I'm not hungry. But if you, and I had this experience with Prabhupada actually. We were in Hong Kong on the peak, and we were walking, and it was the month of, I can't remember, but it was very cold. Not snow like that, but it was overcast, there was fog, and it was quite cold and windy on the Hong Kong peak. Raise your hand if you've ever been on the Hong Kong peak. Only people from this side. Oh, yeah. And me too. And Prabhupada also. More than once Prabhupada went there. So it was very cold. So not being very cultured, and Prabhupada wasn't wearing a coat. He wasn't wearing warm clothing. So I said, "Prabhupada, it's very cold, should we go back?" And he said, "No." But I saw it was very, very cold. And I didn't want Prabhupada to become ill. So I said, Krishna gave me a little intelligence, "Prabhupada, I'm very cold." And he said, "Oh, then we'll go back immediately." So in a similar way, the coward boys, if they said, "Krishna, are you hungry?" He wouldn't want to disturb the playing. So he would have said, no, I'm not hungry. But they wanted to feed Krishna, and they're expert. This is the mentality of a lover. They know the mind of their beloved. This is one of the qualifications of being a true lover, an expert lover. You have to know the mind of your beloved. So you have to know what they want, what will please them, because that's, and it's natural, it's your meditation. That's what it means to be a lover. You're meditating on how to please your beloved continuously. So naturally, you know their mind. So the coward boys, worrying, knowing that Krishna would never say that he was hungry like that. So therefore they said to him, "Oh Krishna, we are so hungry." And he said, "You go to," they're performing a sacrifice. It's right before the Govardhan Puja, and Nanda Maharaj was performing a similar sacrifice. "You go to this village and ask the Brahmins there, because they're performing a sacrifice. They have so much food, and they'll give you some food. You bring it back and we'll enjoy a forest picnic." So they went and they asked in the name of Balaram. They asked the Brahmins who were performing a sacrifice to please the, for their own elevation to the heavenly planets, a selfishly oriented sacrifice. And they asked the Brahmins, "Oh, this is a point in the sacrifice where you can actually give us some food. We're coming to you begging. And Balaram is nearby with his younger brother Krishna, and they are very hungry, and we are all hungry. So please give us some food for Krishna." They didn't quote that. But the Brahmins could not understand their fortune. That Krishna, they had the opportunity to actually feed Krishna. So what did they say? They didn't say anything. They gave the ultimate insult. They didn't even acknowledge their existence, practically speaking. They didn't even reply. They just went on with whatever they were doing with not even replying. And the coward boys were very upset. They had done everything appropriately, and they were insulted in this way. They went back to Krishna and Balaram, who were still with the cows in the nearby forest. And they said, they explained what had happened, that they didn't even reply. And the cow, and Krishna said, he instructed them in a very moral way, "Don't act like ordinary people." And what are the characteristics of ordinary people? When something happens against their desire, they find fault. Immediately, you're criticizing the coward, the Brahmins who are performing the sacrifice. Obviously, they're very busy. You should see it in another way. They were busily engaged with their mind and in their work. Don't be like ordinary fault-finding people. Performing something very important. So don't find fault. But now, instead, you go and ask the wives of these Brahmins for some food. We're not going to go there again. They've insulted us one time. We're not gonna let them do that again. No. These are different. These wives are devotees. They love me. They have love for me in their hearts. Certainly they'll satisfy you. So the coward boys went there. And very, very sweetly they approached the wives of the Brahmins and asked for food in the name of Krishna and Balaram. And just upon hearing the name of Krishna, just by hearing Krishna's name, because they were truly devotees, they had love for Krishna, these cowherd ladies became stunned and they could not say anything. And the cowherd boys were thinking, what is this? We asked their husbands for something, they wouldn't reply to us. We asked their wives, even after Krishna said they're devotees, and they won't reply to us. But it was completely different in this case. And the cowherd ladies, they immediately busied themselves gathering food from here and there, the best of everything they could find, to bring to Krishna and Balaram, who were in the forest. So they followed the cowherd boys who led them to where Krishna and Balaram were. They had heard about Krishna. They had never seen Krishna. They had simply heard about Krishna previously. And they had fallen in love with Krishna because the topics about Krishna are Krishna. They had experienced Krishna through hearing about Krishna from the local people who would wander from one village to the next and say, and everyone would in Braja would just talk about Krishna. So by hearing about Krishna, they had developed such intense love for Krishna. And as they were getting closer to where Krishna was, their anticipation was increasing, and suddenly, they saw him. And this verse describes what they saw. This is the second verse. Shamam haranya paradim vanamalya baha. Datu pravala natavesham manavratamsi. Pravala natavesham manavratamsi. Vinyaste hastam itarena dunanam abjam. Karnod pala lakakapola mukabjahasam. Shamam haranya. So he was dark blue in complexion. Haranya paredim. His garment was golden. Vanamalya, with a forest garland around his neck. Barha, a peacock feather, adorned his head. Very similar. Datu, colored minerals. They saw him having been decorated with the colored minerals that he and the cowherd boys had beautifully decorated his face with. Different colors, yellow and red and blue minerals. The forest of Vrindavan manifests these minerals. So to beautify Krishna and to give the cowherd boys an opportunity, this is the ecstasy of the Vrindavan forest, to manifest things that are for Krishna's pleasure. They have no, the trees, the ground, the everything is alive, conscious, Krishna conscious. And they have no other desire, not a shadow, a pinch, a grain of desire other than to bring pleasure to Krishna. In their own specific mood of Vrindavan. Krishna had been decorated. Pravala. The buds of flowers were decorating him. And Natabharavesham or Natavesham, he was dressed like a dancer in a dramatic, he was dramatically, how to say, like, I don't want to put it in too mundane a context, but how everything was unique and meant to capture your attention. The way everything, the Krishna's earrings, the peacock feather, everything, one of his qualities is he's an artful dresser. The best of dressers and the best of dancers. So he was dressed like a dramatic dancer on a stage. with the what we call gopidats in ISKCON, but his face was decorated with all types of colors, minerals, and flower buds and different colored leaves decorating him. And anuvrata amse vinyasta hastam. And one of his hands was placed upon the shoulder of his friend, just like, where have you seen? Yes. Just so, everything just so relaxed. Everything attractive and beautiful. With one hand, he was resting upon the shoulder of his friend, just like Balaram rests upon Krishna. And with his other hand, what was he doing? He was twirling a lotus flower, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in this way, he was twirling the hearts of these wives of the Brahmins, making them spin. And also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the wives of the Brahmins were making his heart spin. So everything was simultaneously symbolic and beautiful. Why was Krishna's heart spinning? Why was he manifesting more beauty? The words are similar, but Brahma remained like this. And the wives of the Brahmins, their hearts were spinning. They were swooning. Because there was a difference in quality of love. And Krishna had manifested more of his unlimited beauty. Unlimited beauty. More he had manifested into their hearts. And if that wasn't enough, his ears had lotuses or lilies. They were decorated with lotuses and lilies. And alaka kopala mukabja hasam. His face was smiling. What is that kind of bird that does that? It's a crow. But this is a nice sound from a crow, and the nicer sound. And they usually make gentle at the moment. So he was smiling very gently at them. They had come to see him, to offer something to him. And he was smiling, looking at this way, twirling their hearts. His own heart was twirling. This is the form of Krishna that manifests through the holy names. And his hair was extending over his cheeks as he smiled.
Haribol.
Oh, we like the other one more. He's laughing at me as if he cares. So this was the vision that they had. Now we'll read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. First we'll read what he said about Brahma. But first, Brahma's first prayer. This is the first thing he says. This is the consciousness of one of the, or you could say the, if you can say, as Prabhupada would often say, the most exalted. There may be many most exalted acharyas, and certainly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is one of those many most exalted acharyas. So before he begins to comment on Brahma's prayers, and this is the first verse that we had read of Brahma's prayers, this is what he says. This is his comment, the first part of his comment. I am not afraid if the real devotees who are relishing great bliss by collecting loads of jewels, mock my stance of selling jewels, offering a few jewels. In other words, expressing some of his realizations about Brahma's prayers. I'm not afraid if the great devotees who are really relishing these prayers and are collecting many, many valuable jewels, deep, deep, sweet and ecstatic realizations. I am not afraid if they mock my stance of selling or giving away some of my realizations. Meditating with determination solely upon the lotus feet of my guru, my heart desires to cross the ocean of Brahma's prayers. Quite amazing. We'll read a little of his comment about that one description. Gunja berry earrings accent the beauty of your face. Flowers adorn your hair, and a peacock feather rests atop your head. Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lower gunja berries of Braja to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha, because Krishna chooses those gunja berries, the red ones with the blackish centers. He prefers to wear those. Bhushana Bhushanangam. Whatever ornaments he wears, Krishna wears, the ornaments become beautiful by being in touch with Krishna's unlimited beauty. Krishna wants those. His ornamentation isn't complete until he wears those. Because, why? Because they are the gifts offered by Vrindavan. And again, Vrindavan has a special mood in their offerings, a special sweetness in their love. It is so pure that it so much attracts Krishna that he doesn't feel complete with all the gold and pearls and jewels that the parents, he and the cowherd boys, that the parents ornament them when they leave in the morning. But he wants these forest-offered ornaments. He wants to reciprocate with the sweetness and purity of their gift, of their love, because they too twirl his heart and force him to reciprocate in this way. Because Krishna, ultimately, his most glorious and quality is his bhakti-vatsalya. Atma-parjanta-vidanyata. He leans towards the devotees who love him. Purely. He gives himself to the devotees. He won't feel ornamented properly until he accepts the offering of the lowly gunja bush, which is practically speaking a weed. So what do we have to offer Krishna? Even he's laughing at our offerings. But if we can just offer something with devotion, then Krishna becomes inclined, eager to accept it. So therefore, patram pushpam palam toyam yomam bhakti prayasati taraham bhakti parisnam asnami. I will take it, even if it's a leaf or a flower or some water. If it's done with bhakti paritam, then Krishna accepts it. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues. I'll read that line again. Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lowly gunja berries of Braja to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. The forest garland of wild flowers and leaves around Krishna's neck is superior to those made by the Parijata flowers from Swargaloka. By mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, his stick and horn, Brahma indicates the superiority of Krishna's cowherd boy form over all others. In mentioning Krishna's soft feet, Mridupade, Brahma indicates that those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints. By stating that Krishna is the son of the cowherder, Pashupa Angajaya, that was what you had asked about, Brahma shows the superiority of fortune of Nanda Maharaj over Vasudeva. So the Acharyas open up the verses and allow us to glimpse some of the jewels that they have collected. Now, on this verse, this is what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. The wives of the brahmanas have come and they're confronted with this incredibly beautiful vision of Krishna with his arm upon the cowherd, one of his friends. And this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. The brahmana's wife saw Krishna dressed in a yellow cloth, Haranya Parida. He was decorated with a garland of forest flowers and leaves extending to his feet, a Vajrayanti necklace, practically speaking, a peacock feather in his topknot, tilak, and designs of colored clay, fresh leaves tucked in his belt, water lilies over his ears, curls of hair falling over his cheeks, and a beautiful smile on his lotus face. Krishna looked like a theatrical artist. Krishna conveyed his intentions by gestures, resting his left arm on a friend's shoulder and twirling a lotus in his right hand. By this, Krishna was telling the ladies, "I have seized within my hand your lotus hearts, and I'm eagerly twirling them around." Or Krishna was telling them, "While seeing you, who possesses such deep and pure loving sentiments, my lotus heart is twirling out of eagerness." Thus, on the pretext of twirling a toy lotus flower, I'm revealing to you what my heart is twirling about. This is what you should deduce, you should understand from how I am acting.